Turn this over to Mark.
So this brings us into chronobiology, which is basically studying biological rhythms. And these are essentially evolutionary adaptations of solar cycles. And you may wonder, well, why would you want to do that? The answer is you need to prepare for environmental changes. And this regulates things like mating and offspring. You don't want to have children, if you're a deer in the winter, or at times when they're not going to survive. You may be familiar with circadian rhythms, 24-hour cycle generally, but there are other types of rhythms, infradian and ultradian. Infradian is basically greater than 24 hours. It regulates things like migration and seasonal reproduction, the menstrual cycle. And ultradian is a 90-minute sleep cycle, even ingestive behavior like eating. Even the nasal passages, believe it or not, have a rhythm that's about 90 minutes in terms of edema, switching back and forth between either side. So the body is exquisitely controlled through timing mechanisms. So we're going to talk mainly about circadian rhythms. It's interesting to kind of think, why is it 24 hours? Well, it's basically just an artifact of where we happen to have evolved. Had we evolved on a different planet, or a different solar system, or even our own solar system, chances are the circadian rhythm would be different. This, has been observed for many years. The first was Carl Linnaeus in 1751. He actually made a flower clock. So, things like hawk's beard would bloom at 6:30, hawk's bane at 7:30, so you can kind of roughly tell what time of day it is based on these flowering plants. But it really wasn't until around 1918 that Szymanski kind of saw this in animals. He was studying goldfish and noticed that they had basically a biological rhythm that was independent of the environment. It's not just us, and it's not goldfish alone that have this. It's lots of different creatures. In fact, it's been found in all five kingdoms. So fungi have it, prokaryotes, which are single-celled organisms, like cyanobacteria. And so it's really, you can see this is really critical to functioning organisms. Why would a cyanobacteria need this? Well, it needs to be able to prepare for different times of the day. So, producing proteins can be expensive from that standpoint, and they need to use those proteins to protect DNA. And so you want to basically have those proteins produced before the sun comes out. So they need to know basically what time of day it is, and they can do that. As organisms evolved from unicellular to multicellular organisms, the different tissues had to get along. All the cells had to get along with each other. And basically what ended up happening was you have lots of different tissues that have their own independent clocks. These have been found in the esophagus, the liver, the pancreas, the spleen, the thymus, etc. But you need a central controlling mechanism, and that's found in the central nervous system in what's called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or SCN. So basically, the SCN is what coordinates all of these smaller clocks. And it's really exquisitely controlled. So you can look at a lot of different physiological aspects and find how well orchestrated they are. And these are just some examples in humans. How is the suprachiasmatic nucleus set? Well, I apologize for this, but basically, you can imagine that the clock needs to be set. And in this case, it uses the sun as an external time giver. The way to think of this is pretty simple, actually. The pineal gland, just think of it as being default on. So it wants to, if it's allowed, to produce melatonin at any given time. Melatonin tells the rest of the body that it's nighttime. So the way this works is that any sunlight coming in through the eyes hits the retina and then runs along basically the optic nerve to the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which then decides it is going to send a signal down to this ganglion and back up to the pineal gland to shut it off. So simply put, sunlight shuts off the pineal gland. Conversely, darkness will allow melatonin to be produced. And this is, I find, extraordinarily fascinating. So what controls, how do we even find this system in the retina? Well, we knew that light would reset it, the internal clock, but we didn't know if it was all of light or a particular wavelength, so some graduate students kind of teased that out and found out it was blue light. And then a reptile biologist down the hall basically noticed that, hey, you know, I know a pigment that reptiles have in their third eye. Reptiles have an eye in the center that basically controls the same thing. And they found that this pigment that was in reptiles is also in humans, and it's sensitive to blue light. And this is actually a real photomicrograph of our retina with the ganglion cell. It's a retinal ganglion cell that transduces blue light. So we have rods, we have cones, and we have retinal ganglion cells, which aren't even, they've been known for that long. This is kind of a new thing. So this is the crux of the matter here. And I know it looks complicated, but it's really pretty straightforward. So what you're looking at is this wavy line in the center is your wakefulness or sleepiness at any given time of the day. And it is a sum of two different processes. So there's the homeostatic drive, which is very simple from the standpoint that the longer you're awake, like myself, the sleepier you're going to be. And the easiest way to think of this is just imagine that the longer you're awake, a chemical builds up on your brain that is sleep-producing, okay? And then that chemical gets broken down when you sleep, and that's the only way to sort of get rid of it. And that's actually how we think this works. We think, right now, we think it's adenosine that's doing this, but there's some other possible candidates as well. So the top shows that, you know, when you awaken in the morning, there's very little drive for sleep from this standpoint. As the day progresses, you get sleepier and sleepier. But something needs to counteract that. You can't function if you're sleepy. So the circadian is the other cycle that works in a sum fashion here. So the circadian cycle is actually a wakefulness promoting system and to oppose the sleep producing system at the top. And you notice it doesn't need to do much at 9 a.m. because there's not much sleepiness that it needs to oppose. But as the day progresses, it gets more and more wakefulness. Now, it may not feel like that to you, because you're actually experiencing the sum of the two, not the underlying drive of the circadian cycle. And you notice it has to have a really high circadian drive just before bed so that it counteracts all of this sleepiness. And then it suddenly withdraws and allows sleep to happen, and that's what you're seeing here. So melatonin spikes at the peak of the, spikes actually at the nadir of the circadian phase. So melatonin is actually how we know where your clock is set. That's the way we tell what your internal clock is doing. We can measure it. Now this is another sort of complicated diagram. When I talked about light controlling the internal clock, what's interesting is the light controls it depending on what time of day you actually expose somebody to it. So on the left here, we have an adjustment in the internal clock. So imagine somebody goes to bed at 10 p.m. and they awaken at 6 every day. And you expose them to light at night, which is in this zone here. That's the delay zone. So you're going to actually delay their... So they're going to want to go to bed later, maybe midnight, and sleep in until, say, 8 a.m. But if you were to take that same light and expose them to it during the day, there's no effect on the internal clock. So if you're exposed to light at noon, it has no effect either pushing your clock forward or back. There's this sort of inflection point here that happens somewhere in the middle of the night. And I think of it mentally as sort of like Greenwich Mean Time. It's your brain's, this is day one, and then after that inflection point is day two as far as the brain is concerned. And so if you expose someone to light, say, at 5 a.m. here, it's actually going to advance their clock. They're going to want to go to bed earlier and wake up earlier. So this is actually how you control the internal clock. This is a very... It's a very sophisticated system, but it's actually quite easy to control if you know what you're doing. This is one of the ways that we actually measure the internal clock. And, you know, the simple way is a home sleep log evaluation. So, you know, what time do you go to bed? What time do you wake up? Do you sleep in on the weekends? What time do you take your medications? Do you sleep in places other than your bed? Do you take naps? All of these things affect the internal clock. A more sophisticated way would be use one of these watches, which measures your movement. And that little sensory, we use the movement as a surrogate of telling us when you're asleep and when you're awake. And these blue bars are essentially your sleep. So what do you notice with this particular... So let me clarify. These horizontal bars, the row here, is one day. So this is the sleep within that day. This is day two, day three, day four. And then the blue is the time the person's sleeping. And you can see it's getting... later and later, I mean, roughly speaking, it's getting later and later and later each day. So any thoughts on what this might be, what the condition this person might have? So if light sets your internal clock, this is actually someone who's blind. So they don't have any setting of the clock. So it basically just drifts back basically an hour a day. Our internal clocks are actually set long. So they go longer than 24 hours, and we require morning sunlight to reset them every single day. And if you don't have that, it'll just drift later and later and later and later until it wraps around, comes around the other side. There are more sophisticated ways of doing this. Some of my difficult patients will have to use a, I don't mean they're difficult, I mean it's just tough to figure out their internal clock. But basically, we have a wireless thermal capsule that they'll swallow, and this gives us our core body temperature. And if you see here, the nadir of the core body temperature corresponds perfectly to the melatonin peak. So you can kind of use that as a surrogate for melatonin. The gold standard, however, is just to measure their melatonin. But you can't just do that in one fell swoop. You have to do it like, you know, once every hour or once every 90 minutes. They have to spit in a little tube. They have to collect the tubes, put it in the freezer, and they have to wake up multiple times through the night. And it's under very sort of research-type conditions that you can do this. They are developing home kits to do this, but, you know, it's not going to be very easy to do because you've got to block out all the light in your room. There's a lot to it. But that is a way that you can actually objectively determine someone's internal clock. I really like this slide a lot because it tells you a lot. I'll go through it here. So this is, if you just looked at this top photo here, you'd almost think that it was daytime, right? Just looking at the grass and everything, but it's actually night. And these are halogen lights. You have to wonder what impact, you know, kids playing at 9:30 p.m. soccer with lights up in the sky as though they were suns would have on their internal clock. They're going to basically, it's going to push them back. They're going to want to go to bed late. They don't want to sleep in late. You know, and these are kids who have to get on the bus at 6 a.m. So this is not a good idea. In my experience, this kind of technology is a grand experiment that we're not exactly sure what the outcome's going to be. I thought this photo was pretty fascinating because this, to me, if you just glanced at it, didn't really pay attention to the details, it almost looks like somebody doing light therapy. You know, like, well, they sit in front of a light box. This is just somebody on a computer at night. So it's essentially light therapy at the completely diametrically opposite time of the day you should be doing it. And this, again, will push the clock back, much as this lower picture depicts of this girl opening her eyes, holding her eyes, lids open, and getting exposed to TV light. But take a look at these four pictures and compare them to what's on the right. Whoops. What do you notice, those two, other than that are natural sources of light? Well, if you just glance at them and don't really pay attention to the content, the ones on the right are more orange, yellow, red. The ones on the left have a bluish, greenish tone to them, right? And this isn't me doing this in Photoshop. This is just the nature of light. So artificial sources of light, halogens, incandescents, LEDs, LCDs, these have a huge amount of blue spectrum in them, and they affect the internal clock dramatically. Humans have used oil lamps, candles, you know, campfires for thousands of years without any effect on our internal clock. And it's because all hydrocarbons, like those, burn orange-red. They don't have any blue in them. So this is an experiment. We don't know really what this is doing to our internal clocks, and I suspect that it's pushing them back. And I know that from the patients that I see. So what do we do about this? I can't, you know, I don't want everybody to go back and start having candles in their houses and then calling me because everything got caught on fire and that kind of thing. So what we do is we use technology to beat technology. And what I usually use with my patients are light restriction glasses. They're amber lens glasses. You put them over your prescriptions if you want. Basically what you need to do, you know, is counteract the light at night that has messed us up. Is that 15? So this is my last slide. So you would basically create an artificial sunset. It's artificial only because you have an artificial light in your house to begin with. And so you would set a timer, say, I don't know, 7:30 p.m., depending on what time you want to go to bed, and you wear these glasses for 2 hours until you get into your bed. And then once you turn the light off in your bed, you then take them off, put them on the bedside stand, and you're good to go. Melatonin also works. It does not put you to sleep, though. Like a lot of people use it. They'll take it at bedtime, and they'll think that it's a hypnotic agent. It's really an internal clock resetter. Unless you know when to give it and how to take it, it's not going to have the right desired impact. And the way you know it's working is not if you fall asleep, but actually if you can awaken earlier, easier, without wanting to sleep in late. Light therapy, so we got rid of light at night. We want to do the opposite in the morning. You want to expose yourself to light. You don't have to do it artificially. You can just go outside. That's the best. But if you want to use blue light, you can do that. If you want to use full spectrum light, that's good also. So thank you very much. And whether you're a lark or a night owl, it's all good.